Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 84 for November 19th. Chance Watson, Madison Hardy, and Hannah Neff with us today. Hannah, welcome to the show.
Hi.
This episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. We actually just shared a video on the Coeur d'Alene Facebook. I don't know if you saw that. Their CEO, Phil Baker, he like rang the bell at the stock market.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was super cool. I didn't know that he actually would go over there and do that, but
yeah,
it's cool.
Love Hecla.
Well, they're based out of here in Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah, always love for natives.
Yeah, absolutely. Madison, Hannah, what's going on? How are things?
It's cold. It's really cold.
We had some snow come down this morning, and actually it's kind of sticking, sort of.
In certain areas.
Yeah.
It's like if you haven't moved your car, then you got a nice little dusting on there.
Something like that. I'm more upset with like when I walk out in the morning and my car is frozen over. Oh. I need to get a good ice scraper. The credit card's not cutting it anymore. No. I used to use my old Post Falls High School student ID up until like 3 years ago.
Really?
Because it was all I used it since high school, and it was already mangled. So I'm going to keep using it until it falls apart, and it's finally pretty much done.
I'm not so worried about, like, the frost on my windshield. That's, like, something I can deal with. But my car takes painfully long to warm up. Like, painfully. Like, I am breathing out, and there is, like, smoke or whatever it is, the condensation.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, that's fun. And it'll stay like that for, like, a solid 10 minutes at least, maybe 15. So it's by the time I get to the same place, it's still cool.
Well, you and your car have been at odds lately, though, so.
She's a trooper.
She's a trooper. I just got, like, the auto start button thing for my car because I was like, I'm so done this winter. Like,
you got the auto start?
Yeah. Oh. And it can do it from, like, 2 miles away, which is, like, I hope I'll never need to start it from 2 miles away. But apparently I can if I need to.
That is so cool, though. I've been wanting to do that for a long time.
My boyfriend has one of those cars that's, like, a push to start. So yeah. He can, like, take his keys, walk out, like, lock the car, which is what we do with our dog. We'll, like, leave the dog in there, leave the car on, walk into the grocery store, get all of our groceries, come back, it's still on, everything's fine and locked. And I cannot explain to you how much I wish that my car had that. Because there's so many times that you want to, like, run inside and unlock your front door, we have to turn off the alarm, bring everything with you.
I think my truck's in the middle ground. It's a brand new Toyota Tacoma, so like it's got the heated seats, which is nice. But I don't have the push to start, and I don't have like the remote start either. So you got to get the middle ground.
The push to start is kind of weird, though. That's what my new car has, and it's just weird not having a key actually.
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah, that could be weird.
Yeah, I know. Like mine, it's like turn the key on, and then I have like. I'm going to say the Prindle. And it's so customary for me to turn my car on, grab the gear shift, and, like, start working. But my boyfriend's mom's car has one of those cars that it's instead of having a gear shift, it's like a circle that you turn.
Oh, I've seen this.
And
yeah.
It's so weird to me. It does not make sense to me. And I'm constantly afraid that I'm going to hit it.
It's
and
off-putting.
Just go into reverse.
Yeah. It's off-putting. Like, that. It just seems like so... Like dinky almost?
Too easy.
Right, exactly. The things in life that can't be that easy, right? So I wanted to talk holiday stuff with you guys because we talked about it on the last show and it sparked up some debate for sure. But before I did, I wanted to give a shout out to Gabe Lawson over at Post Falls High School. I was invited over there to talk podcasting with BPA, Business Professionals of America. That was an honor. I was glad to come in and hopefully go over there and talk with them some more. I was a BPA. I was in BPA back when I went to Post Falls High, so it was kind of cool for that experience. So, Madison, on the last episode, we talked holiday songs. We talked holiday movies. Of course, around this time of year, Mariah Carey rises and everybody listens to her. So we asked what are your favorite holiday songs around this time of the year that aren't like the traditional ones. Like you can't say Mariah Carey. You can't say Bing Crosby's White Christmas. It's got to be something kind of off the wall a little bit. And we've had some very interesting stuff. We had one listener tell us about some Lynyrd Skynyrd songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was interesting. So what comes to mind when you first start thinking about holiday music? First thing that pops in your head?
I'm not sure what the song's actually called, but Merry Little Christmas.
Merry Little Christmas. Who sings it?
I don't know. Have yourself.
Okay, that's a classic though.
Yeah, my family didn't. My mom loves Christmas music. I'll just put that out there.
Sure.
The rest of my family, not so much.
Sure.
It's like only during presents opening and tree decorating. That is it.
That's traditional.
I also do hate Michael Bublé with a passion.
Oh, so, and he is one of the kings around this time of the year.
But I like the really old classic Christmas songs, you know, stuff that you see in a Hallmark movie. That's the go-to.
I'd have to Google it. I thought Bing Crosby's White Christmas is like the top-selling album, or at least it was for decades or something like that.
Top-selling Christmas album?
I think it was top-selling album for a long time. Well, until like Thriller maybe. I don't know. I'd have to Google that for sure. But it's up there, 100%. Michael Jackson's Thriller. I knew that was number one, 100%. But Bing Crosby's White Christmas is up there.
I'm looking.
Yeah, look into it.
What about you, Hannah?
I'm like really bad with Christmas music. It just kind of is Alexa play Christmas music.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
She picks the songs.
That's fine.
And yeah.
No, I like that though. And nowadays, especially with holiday music, they're retreads. Like it's multiple people singing the same different songs over and over and over. We don't get a lot of new Christmas music. You know what I mean? I said on the last show, I appreciate Elvis around this time of the year, Elvis's Christmas album. And then, what was the other one? George Strait, he sings a song called Christmas Cookies. It's a good song. But in any case, okay, so now that moves us into...
Elvis's Christmas album is the number one Christmas album.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know that. I thought
Bing Crosby is on neither list.
Really? I'd have to look into that. Okay. I could have sworn maybe it's just something that you hear and then you take to heart and then you never look up and assume that it's right. Shouldn't do that. I'm a journalist, but okay. Something that was talked about on the show last week, but we didn't really get into it because we were already at the tail end of our cold open. Die Hard. Christmas movie or not. And I know that you have some familiarity with this.
In my dad's mind, that is the Christmas movie.
It is the Christmas movie?
We have, like, other ones that we watch. We have, like, an English one that we have historically watched every year. But that, to him, that's what goes on when me and my mom are making Christmas dinner.
Is there an English Die Hard?
No.
That'd probably just be James Bond, huh? Mm. Mm. The closest to it?
I mean, it's an action movie, so... Everyone has action movies, but
that's fair.
I don't know of any that are specifically based on Christmas.
That's okay. No. I was getting off track. I was trying to think of the closest semblance to Die Hard in England. But in any case, okay. So I like it as a holiday film. It's not the holiday film, but I'd count it as a Christmas film. I think it's become synonymous with that.
Yeah, I guess my family's just weird. I mean, like Thanksgiving. The go-to movies, Indiana Jones.
Hmm. Okay.
Really?
Well, it used to always be like a marathon on like one channel, so we just got in the habit of it.
Are there Thanksgiving movies, though?
Like... I mean, there's like a Charlie Brown one.
There's specials. Like, I mean, there's like... that. Like, so when I think of it, we've talked about my love for That 70s Show on this show many times. But so like there's a holiday episode for almost every holiday, I think.
Yeah.
There's a 4th of July one. There's a Thanksgiving one. So like that... comes to mind. Like I think of that one, it still comes to mind when like Fez yells out in the background that Eric's failing math right in front of everybody before he's about to, right, you guys, like it, like it's so clear in my mind. And and the steps, Eric's sister Lori's like all angry, RIP. I know, sad. I learned about that fairly recently, actually.
That right,
yeah, that's not it's not great.
Did you watch that
same
show?
No. What?
Are you serious? I don't really watch a lot of
Hannah, it's you're new on the show. We got to know what you listen to, what you watch. What do you have an old show that you've watched before? What'd you grow up on?
I like to watch Seinfeld.
Oh, you and Josh need to have a conversation.
They have Thanksgiving and Christmas episodes, right?
I'm not sure. I haven't finished like in order, mm-hmm. like all of them. So,
okay.
And I don't look at like what date it was released, so I don't know like if it was like on a holiday or something. But
that makes sense.
So I haven't come across. I don't think any that were the holiday ones, but
okay.
Okay.
I can buy that.
That's I get good. That. I mean, realistically, the only reason I know that Die Hard was on every Christmas, because I basically never watched it other than the first couple times, was because it was always on. It was like, you sure. know, like, it wasn't something that like I had to guess about. It was just going to happen.
There are those TV movies that I have watched. So the days of basic cable where you just turned on FX and there was a movie on. I've seen The Devil Wears Prada so many times because it was just the movie on FX, and it played, like, I swear they would just play it back to back to back, but it's...
We love Meryl Streep.
Because of FX, I have seen a lot of Transporter 2. I wish I could take that back.
I have no idea what that is.
With Jason Statham. Don't watch it. You don't need to. It's terrible. It's not worth your time or effort or even your thoughts. Okay, how about we get in some news? Ready?
Yeah.
All right. But before that, initial success or total failure? Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing into the tap room today to try the 8th Anniversary Barrel-Aged Imperial Stout Black Hand, or for you cider fans out there, have a glass of the newly released Caramel Apple Cider. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Be sure to check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all-day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, Thirsty Thursdays with Jason Perry, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Remember, the Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide variety of North Idaho cider beverages for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast when you order to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho. And moves us into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines for Wednesday, November 17th. Headline, Plugged Back In. This is by Bill Bewley. Power was restored Tuesday to most homes and businesses that lost electricity during Monday's windstorm, which produced gusts of more than 60 miles per hour in North Idaho. Avista reported early Tuesday it had restored power to roughly 32,000, or about 94%, of the 34,000 customers who had lost power at the height of the storm. Nearly all remaining customers had power restored by the end of Tuesday. Quote, the storm impacted both transmission and distribution lines, causing damage throughout Avista's Washington and Idaho service territory, a press release said. The majority of the remaining outages were in areas most impacted by the high winds. Most outages were caused when branches and trees hit power lines. There were a few fallen trees, toppled trash cans, and torn tarps left behind Tuesday morning. Otherwise, there were a few signs of the storm that lasted several hours. By early Tuesday afternoon, Avista's power outage map showed only 8 outages in Coeur d'Alene, Hutter, and Post Falls areas, affecting fewer than 50 customers. Kootenai Electric Cooperative had several thousand customers without power Monday. Crews made good progress Tuesday, and by early afternoon, it had about 115 members experiencing outages and 26 separate outages. Quote, in addition, we have another 17 areas on the system not causing outages but in need of repairs, such as a tree on the line, a release said. KEC expects to have power restored by 10 p.m., with the exception of those members who have meter-based or service mast damage, which will require an electrician to repair. Colder temperatures are expected this week, and the area could see snow on Friday. Well, we know that that's already happened, because we have it outside. Definitely not as bad as the other windstorm that we had earlier this year.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of when I heard those winds. I was like, oh,
yeah.
No more trees.
That stressed me out a lot. That was a really rough time all around for that windstorm. So I'm glad that it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I think we're just lucky. One of the things that I heard after the windstorm in January or February, mm-hmm. was when it happened, is that because we'd had so much rain right before it, the ground was super loose.
Oh, okay.
So when the winds were hitting the trees, especially older ones.
Easier to pull them up?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Get that.
All right, that goes into growth continues, increase in residential, commercial, still thriving. This one's by Ellie Goldman Hilbert. Entering his third term as mayor, Ron Jacobson gave his seventh seat of the city address Tuesday at the Red Lion Temple Hotel. No one will deny that River City has seen some dramatic changes in recent years. Drawing comparisons between 2020 and current numbers, Jacobson discussed the issuance of building permits this year. Some permit numbers have not been as high as expected, despite the growth the area has seen, he said. Quote, single-family residential growth decreased in 2020 compared to 2019, and for 2021, we're at 408 permits through the end of October, Jacobson said. We're probably going to catch 2020, but it's interesting to note that with all the talk of growth, we are down to levels equal to 2018 and 2019. Multifamily building permits paint a different picture, Jacobson said, and there's definitely been a spike. Quote, in 2020, almost 900 doors went in, which is significantly higher than 2019, and 2021 is significantly lower than 2020, Jacobson said. Most projects being built had been approved up to 15 years ago, he added, with several multifamily projects under review, including Parkway Place, which offers 120 units, and The Landing expected to offer 168, Jacobson has questions. Quote, how many multifamily units are going to be sustainable for the city? He asked. The more we build, the more we'll see people come into the area, and with the price of housing right now, that's probably one of the few options that people can afford. The spike in multifamily development recently is out of alignment with in previous years when single and multifamily developments occurred more evenly with each other. Quote, just look at total permits. You can see that residential is the bulk of the permits that have been issued, Jacobson said. But it's nice to see that the commercial is a bigger percentage for 2021 because that does help spread the tax base for the city. In 2001, the number of new jobs was about 10,000, Jacobson said. In 2020, that number jumped to 14,500, an increase of 41%. While employment opportunities continue, labor force statistics show a shortage of workers to fill those jobs, Jacobson said. Quote, we're seeing a lot of people move here that are retired and a lot of people moving here that are bringing their jobs with them, Jacobson said. It's a concern I have, making sure that we have a workforce available.
So this isn't any new news. We've been talking about some versions of this for quite a while now.
Growth
in the area.
Growth.
Us struggling with it. Unemployment, businesses just struggling to find workers, all of that kind of stuff. It all wraps in with one another.
What a holly jolly area we live in.
We do. I mean, and from what I've been told from real estate folks, prices have gone down a little bit.
Yeah.
But they're still quite high for this area compared to even 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to continue to see these
multifamily.
Thank you. Multifamily developments, yeah, residential area, like large apartment buildings and that kind of thing, for the simplistic sake of saying it. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more of these in the future.
Yeah. I mean, when I sit in city council, so many people are upset about the multifamily, which I understand to a sense. You probably don't want to see like a huge apartment building next to your single family home. But one thing that I always think about is that, one, that's where people like me and Hannah, who are younger, can mm-hmm. afford. We can't afford a house, and we probably don't want to get one just yet. Mm-hmm. And then another thing, which I think is interesting, is that multifamily is technically a commercial development. Mm-hmm. It's not actually residential. So, but like Jacobson said, it does help to even out the tax base a little bit.
It does. Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think it has its purpose. I do agree with you that, like, you know, on the surface, they're not necessarily, I wouldn't say an eyesore, they're not that bad. But, I mean, you've got a lot of stuff crammed into one little area. So I understand that for sure. But as also, yes, as somebody who lives in one of those, I get it. I understand. Totally. All right, moving on. This is reality. Or is this just fantasy? No, I'm just kidding. It's not the headline. Come on. Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah.
No. Okay. All right. This is by Bill Bewley. Cooper is a 5-year-old hound mix who needs a home. Oh, Cooper. He seemed to sense what was going on Tuesday afternoon just off Atlas Road was good for his future as he stood on his hind legs and greeted Kootenai Humane Society board member Denise Morris. Quote, it's super exciting, Morris said of the groundbreaking for the KHS's new home. We've been waiting for a long time to do this. Likewise for Kelly Gill, KHS volunteer coordinator. Quote, it just means everything to us, she said, smiling. For years, we've been working on this, and I've got so many volunteers volunteers that have been involved in it. The plan is to build a no-kill shelter, a little over 200,000 square feet, and have it completed within 8 to 10 months. KHS raised $5.3 million over the past few years toward its goal of $6.5 million. Even though it was a bit short, it forged ahead because it had to move due to a planned expansion of the Coeur d'Alene Airport and future extension of Ramsey Road. To make up the finance shortfall, the board reduced building plans and eliminated a few rooms. But it will still be a vast improvement over the old shelter, about a mile east on Ramsey Road, where plumbing and electrical issues were not unusual and kennel space was tight. That's, that place has been there forever. I remember going there when I was a kid to pick up one of my beagles when I was a kid. Beagles. Those dogs howl. I loved those dogs so much, but they just... It's just a... Yeah, when you're at, when it's 3 a.m. and you have to go to school at 6, yeah, you're not... It's not great. Board President Cindy Eddington said on her drive to the groundbreaking, she thought about KHS and its legacy that started over 40 years ago. So she believes that KHS had rescued tens of thousands of dogs and cats in that time. So far this year, it adopted out 1,380 animals. The new shelter will allow KHS to take even better care of animals that come in and find homes for them. Quote, "This allows us to continue that legacy," Eddington said. Well, I'm just so happy to hear that. I think that
it's been a long time coming.
Yes, it absolutely has, and it sounds like not only does it help animals in Kootenai County, but all over the place. When that puppy mill, that Pomeranian mill, was found in Kellogg, KHS took over a lot of them.
Pomeranian mill, I've never heard that.
Well, I mean, I'd like to say puppy mill implies that they were like breeding them to sell. This was just a woman with mental issues, but in any case, yeah, they helped out with that situation as well, and have in similar circumstances throughout throughout the time that it's been around. So it's a good thing for the entire area.
Absolutely. All right, that takes us to Thursday, November 18th. Headline: Simply the Best. This one's by Bill Bewley. Brock Poole learned much from his grandfather, Ron Edinger. There was one particular message that he and the rest of the Edinger clan took to heart. Quote, "Family brings you together," Poole said. "My grandfather instilled this in everyone." Ron Edinger, former mayor of Coeur d'Alene and longtime city council member, died Wednesday. He was 85. He was elected to city council in 1967, served until 1973, and then was elected mayor in 1973 and served for 4 years. Edinger ran for city council again in 1979 and served through 2019. Wow. City Administrator Tori Timeson referred to Edinger as, quote, "an amazing elected official for 50 years. Quote, "I don't anticipate that ever happening again. He was passionate about many attributes of our community, especially the parks, recreation programs, and Tubbs Hill," Timeson wrote. "He was an inspirational elected official that told you exactly what he was thinking. He prioritized the things that are important in life, and community was high on his list. However, family was always first." Mayor Steve Widmeyer and Edinger's death was a sad day for the city. Quote, "Ron was a great mentor and friend. He was the best elected official that our city has ever had," Widmeyer wrote. "His 50 years of committed public service to our city will never be matched. Edinger is credited with many major accomplishments, starting with the preservation of Tubbs Hill for public use. He was also involved in the acquisition of City Hall campus property and construction of the current City Hall, fire training tower, development of Independence Point, Government Way and Northwest Boulevard, Midtown improvements, Crocs Center, the Coeur d'Alene Public Library, new police department headquarters, several parks, and the annual leaf pickup program." Edinger was inducted into the Idaho's Hall of Fame in 2018 for a outstanding achievement in government and public services. Mike Kennedy served 8 years with Edinger on the city council from 2006 to 2014. He, quote, "he had a profound stamp on the city," Kennedy said, adding that Edinger was tuned into the people. Quote, "he had his finger on the pulse of Coeur d'Alene for decades," Kennedy said. He said Edinger had a role in Coeur d'Alene's transitioning from a resource-based economy to a diverse one that has enabled the area to thrive. I could not imagine holding public office for 50 years.
I oh through some familial ties, I do know him, or I did know him rather. Good guy. He always looked out for the folks that were around here. And I mean, if you're in for that long, you must be doing something right if you're an elected official. Moving on. Ooh. Hanna is up. Hanna, what's your headline here?
Resorts envision dessert after feast.
Oh, and this one's written by you.
Okay. Well, I'm
going to
give it a try.
Let's do it.
Okay. Those itching to swoop down the mountain can prepare for anticipated openings of Lookout Pass, Silver Mountain, and Schweitzer Ski Resorts the day after Thanksgiving. Matt Sawyer, marketing and sales manager for Lookout Pass Ski Resort, said they're looking to open up November 26th or earlier if weather permits. Quote, it all depends on whether it's snowing up here, Sawyer said. The current weather forecast is in favor of a good season for the Pacific Northwest. About 20 to 24 inches of snow is needed to build up a base and get the front of the mountain open, Sawyer said, which is what the resort expects to have by the end of next week. Sawyer said if they get enough snow, they'll open up more of the mountain, but they want to make sure they don't open with too little on the ground. As far as masking and social distancing, Sawyer said they'll be following whatever state and Panhandle Health District requirements are in place. Currently, masks are not required, only requested for indoor facilities. Schweitzer Mountains Resort in Sandpoint will return to no masks outdoors, although there may be other requirements indoors during peak times and holidays, marketing manager Dig Christmas said. Quote, we're going to fill chairlifts to max capacity. There's no ghost lanes to space people out, Christmas said. We feel that outside, people are pretty safe. Weather permitting, Christmas said they plan to open the early season for pass holders with very limited terrain. Quote, thanks to the cold temps, we've been able to make snow the last two nights, Christmas said Wednesday. It's a step in the right direction. Lift ticket sales won't start until mid-December at the latest, depending on weather, as the snow allows for more runs to open and people to spread out over the mountain, Christmas said. Gus Colburn, marketing manager for Silver Mountain Resort in Kellogg, said they're looking forward to a lot of snowfall within the next 2 weeks. That would make their November 26 opening date realistic. Colburn said the amount of snow they get will determine how much of the terrain will be open and whether there's enough room to open lift sales or just open access to pass holders. Quote, if we only have one run open, then we obviously want to keep that just for our pass holders so it doesn't get too crowded, Colburn said. We just want to make sure that everyone has enough space to do their thing. As of now, there are no mask requirements, and the resort will continue to follow PhD guidelines for safety protocols, Colburn said. Do you guys ski or snowboard?
I don't. I went snowboarding once when I was a senior in high school, and I thought that I was doing pretty well until the front of my board dug into the snow. And now, and now my nose, as you can see, is permanently crooked. So... it goes this way. Yeah, it looks like I have Charlie Sheen's nose. So yeah, no, I haven't been back since. I do enjoy it, and I actually almost got talked into getting one of the pairs of, like, I don't know if you've seen them. They're like ice skates, but they're not. They're like for the hill. They're just slick bottoms, and they're like snow skates almost. Very interesting. They're kind of cool. Huh. Yeah, I'll have to pull up this. It's kind of like Heelys, Madison.
I love Heelys. I was the Clint.
So, okay.
I am once again requesting you
to just channeling the Bernie Sanders meme. So now, but now it's on Clint to, because he hasn't gotten it yet. Now he owes us three pairs because Hannah's on the show now.
It has been a year. We did ask for them for Christmas we did. Last year.
This has gone on way too long.
There we go. All right, that leads us into Friday, November 19th headlines. Crisis standards of care continue. This one's by Bill Bewley. The Idaho Board of Health and Welfare unanimously approved the new temporary rule containing crisis standards of care in Idaho during a special board meeting Thursday. The previously temporary rule expired Wednesday, November 17th, because the Idaho legislature adjourned sine die on that day. Quote, approval of this temporary docket by the board today keeps the crisis standards of care for healthcare entities in effect, said Tamara Prescott with DHW. Crisis standards of care have been active in North Idaho since September 6th. Officials activated crisis standards of care for healthcare entities statewide 10 days later due to rising COVID-19 cases that threatened to push hospital staff and resources beyond their limits. Quote, the activation of crisis standards of care allows healthcare entities to implement crisis strategies to address scarce resource situations when the usual standard of care cannot be provided, reads the temporary justification. According to DHW release, when CSC is activated, people who need medical care may find no hospital beds, rooms, or needed equipment available to them. Quote, in other words, someone who is otherwise healthy and would recover more rapidly may get treated or have access to a ventilator before someone who is not likely to recover, a DHW release said. Hospitals across the state, including Kootenai Health in Coeur d'Alene, have had to delay elective surgeries because they have to care for so many COVID-19 patients. However, on Tuesday, DHW Director Dave Jepson said due to recent declines in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths attributed to COVID-19 in Idaho, quote, I do anticipate we are on a path to exit crisis standards of care. Kootenai Health reported Thursday it had 64 COVID-19 patients, with 22 requiring critical care. In early October, KH had 150 COVID-19 patients, with 43 in critical care. Oof. There have been encouraging signs in the battle against coronavirus. The Panhandle Health District's positivity rate for COVID-19 declined for the sixth straight week to 10.2% for the week ending in November 13th, based on 3,000 PCR tests. On October 2nd, PHD's positivity rate was 23.1%. Cooney County's positivity rate fell to 9.4%, the lowest since July 17th. It reached 23% on October 2nd. The state's positivity rate fell for the ninth straight week to 7.2%. That's the lowest in nearly 4 months. In the last 5.5 weeks, there have been 185 COVID-19 deaths in the Panhandle. Health officials continue to urge people, including kids 5 to 11, to get vaccinated. In Kootenai County, 46% of the population age 12 and older is fully vaccinated.
I mean, it sounds like numbers are going in the good direction.
I know. I'm a little happy.
A little better.
I'm like hesitantly happy.
If we can get through the holiday season without seeing another spike, I think that's going to be a positive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. Hannah, round two.
Stressed. I'm so bad.
We've been doing this for a little while now. In fact, what are we at? What did I say? Episode 84. Can you imagine that? We've been 84. We're almost at 100 episodes, Madison.
People have listened to us 84 times.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
We're trying to shake it up now with Hannah. People like her calm, soothing voice.
This story is called All Turkeyed Out, written by myself. Pallets of turkeys and hundreds of cars filled the parking lot Thursday at heart of the city church. Quote, "It's such a blessing," Dallas Danielson of Post Falls said. "I just moved from Seattle, so to get this kind of pick-me-up for a whole meal is really great." Through HeartReach Incorporated, the nonprofit food bank arm of Heart of the City Church, the annual Turkeys and More giveaway distributed 1,800 turkeys to families in time for Thanksgiving. Quote, "I think it's so important that families have a nice holiday together as a family," coordinator Evelyn Adams said. "We just want to make sure everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving meal with their family in their home." Along with the frozen birds, volunteers handed out around 650 Super One Foods gift cards so families could purchase the holiday trimmings. Quote, "We think altogether over 7,000 people will be eating the turkeys that are distributed," Adams said. "Our plan is to fight hunger and feed hope, because if people get a hand up in a situation like this, it gives them hope that they live in a caring community." Through donations, mostly from businesses and organizations, the group gave out holiday blessings with a $51,000 budget. Around 650 birds were distributed at the church by a group of volunteers. The rest were sent to local food banks. Lauren Cavalla, a member of Unity Spiritual Center of North Idaho, said she heard about the event through her church as she worked on patching holiday recipes with the Super One Foods gift cards. Quote, "I just love to help people," Cavalla said. "It's so fun to be out with other people, connecting and doing something good." With treats for the dogs and candy for the kids, Adam said they tried to make the event as welcoming as they could. Quote, "This is a caring community," Adam said. "With a little help, it makes it a lot easier."
Hmm. What a nice story.
There were long lines. It was a fun day.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Well, and nowadays, I mean, you're starting to see national news talking about turkey shortages and whatnot.
That's the first thing I thought when I read your story. I was like, hey, people getting turkey news.
Absolutely. That's a good thing to hear. They don't have to compete with me. I'm not one of those people. Turkey's not my favorite.
What do you eat for Thanksgiving?
I'm just not a big Thanksgiving person. I'm Halloween and Christmas. Thanksgiving is that middle in between that I just don't really celebrate. I don't know. I don't have anything against it. I love Christmas and I love Halloween. So it's just that one in the middle, I guess.
Just
that
the gets top two.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's push into Shoshone News Press headlines for Friday, November 19th. Headline: Christmas Festival Just a Week Away in Kellogg. This is by Josh McDonald. Sleigh bells are jingling, or at least they will be in a week, as the Silver Valley Chamber of Commerce brings the Silver Valley Christmas Lighting Festival to Kellogg once again. You guys ever watch Parks and Recreation?
Yeah.
When Tom, they do the tree lighting. We're going to broadcast that tree lighting over the radio. Listening to that tree lighting is going to be dope. Sorry, that's first thing I thought of. Anyway, the annual event took a small hiatus last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but it's back this year and hopefully bigger than ever. As part of the festivities, the chamber organizes a craft fair for local makers, a holiday parade, and then the day concludes with the tree lighting ceremony and fireworks show at Silver Mountain. Throughout the same day, businesses throughout the area will be participating in the Shop Small Saturday, a localized version of the national event that emphasizes shopping at local businesses on the Saturday following Thanksgiving, one of the busiest shopping periods of the entire year. Shoppers will have the opportunity to use the Silver Valley Shop Local Saturday stamp card at the participating businesses. This will get them access to exclusive holiday deals and specials, and each store gets the shopper a stamp. Each stamp is an entry into a drawing for one of the several local gift cards. However, instead of only running for a single day, Silver Valley Shop Small event will run through December 24th. Stamp cards are available at local businesses and will be available at the craft fair, as well as the Silver Valley Chamber of Office. The Chamber is hoping to get as much participation as they can from their local community, not just in Shop Small, but in all phases of their lighting festival. Quote, We are really looking forward to this holiday season with our wonderful community, said Silver Valley Chamber Coordinator Becca Stone. We are still accepting vendor applications for the craft fair and for whoever would like to participate in the parade. Silver Valley Christmas Lighting Festival is Saturday, November 27th. The craft fair will be held at Kellogg Middle School from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The holiday parade, which will run from Main Street into Uptown Kellogg all the way down to Silver Mountain Base, begins at 5 p.m. Christmas tree lighting ceremony and fireworks show begins at 6 p.m. at Silver Mountain. For more information or to register for either the craft fair or the parade, email Becca at silvervalleychamber.com. That's SilverValleyChamber.com or call 208-784-0821. And you can also stop by the Chamber office at 10 East Station Avenue in Kellogg to pick up a Shop Small stamp card.
Love it.
I did this. I've written that story previously and participated in it. It's actually kind of fun. It's like kind of filling up a bingo card, sort of.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fun. And you get to check out local businesses, stuff that you honestly kind of didn't know existed. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, sometimes you just don't know that these small businesses exist, but you get to discover them and you get to find cool stuff.
I will say I took my mom up to Wallace when she came up and visited this past late summer.
I know. I saw you there.
I know. For everyone that needs to know this, apparently, my mother loved Chance's beard.
Oh, that makes me so happy to hear.
Yes. And we love the little shops up there. They're so cute and there's so many great vintage shops and antique shops. Loved it. Definitely 10 out of 10. Would recommend. All right. That leads us into Christmas Comes Early from Meals on Wheels.
This is Madison. It's one of those stories you're going to be like, my heart.
Well, I remember reading this story last time.
I know, but we got, it's good. Good news.
All right. This one's by Chelsea Newby. The Silver Valley Meals on Wheels program may have been the first to receive a holiday miracle this winter season. In a previous article just 2 weeks ago, the News Press highlighted the nonprofit organization's importance in the community as it spent more than 20 years delivering warm meals to roughly 50 to 100 homebound seniors every day. However, at the time, the organization had seen a long period of financial difficulty, taking on around $2,000 of financial losses every month, which had them struggling to keep the program running. Quote, at this point, we can continue with what we have for probably 2 months, and then something has to be addressed, Meals on Wheels program manager Daryl Lemieux said at the time. To help cut costs, the program was reduced to a 5-day delivery schedule, from a 5-day delivery schedule to just 3 days, something that had never been done before and was a concern for Lemieux as his team often provided wellness checks on many meal recipients in addition to their hot meal of the day. In an effort to raise awareness and support, Lemieux called on the News Press as well as friends and community members. What happened next, he says, is nothing short of divine. Lemieux explained how, as soon as the word spread about the program's difficult circumstances, people from all over the Silver Valley and beyond came immediately to answer the call. Within days, the program had seen enough financial support to get their crews back to delivering meals and smiles full time. From there, Lemieux said things continued to surge. Quote, when this first happened, I was getting around 25 calls a day with people wanting to help. Now things have slowed down, but I'm still getting around 10 calls every day. It's actually to the point where it's getting hard to get my usual stuff in, he said with a laugh. But that's a great problem to have. It's just out of this world. Lemieux has been no stranger to raising funds for various causes over the years, but said this is unlike anything he's ever seen. Quote, it's been unbelievable, he said. I've been in other situations where I've had to raise money for things, but this has been the biggest turnout and support that I've ever seen. And it's not just money. It's been grants and volunteers and people just showing up wanting to help. While the program is not in the clear yet, Lemieux said that the road toward long stability is looking a lot less daunting. Linked to the original article was a GoFundMe account that was set up with a goal of $30,000, which Lemieux said would provide the organization the immediate support needed to operate. Currently, the account has raised $9,750. But with the community support, the organization was able to surpass their original goal and are now looking to achieve long-term stability. Quote, I haven't corrected the problem completely, but we're on that road right now, he said. Lemieux knows will take ongoing support to keep the program running for years to come, but that right now the team will now organize funds and work into a budget to make it last as long as possible. Lemieux also mentioned that he wants to give a heartfelt thank you to everyone in the community who made this program's continuation possible. While the ability to breathe a quick sigh of relief has been alleviated for their staff, he emphasized that the ability to show each senior recipient that they are far from being forgotten by the community has been invaluable. Quote, it's an uplift for everyone, he said. If they read this or they feel that support, can you imagine how that makes them feel? We've been telling them that, but this is another way of hearing it. If you'd like to become a sponsor for the Meals on Wheels program, donations can be made to their GoFundMe or at the Silver Valley Senior Center at 208-752-1194, in person at 726 East Mullen Avenue in Osborne, or by mail at P.O. Box 887, Osborne, Idaho, 83849.
So it's... I'm very happy for Chelsea about this story. As you guys may or may not know, this job can sometimes be thankless, and sometimes downright we get insulted and we take our lumps for things deserved or not deserved one way or the other. But it's very nice when you have a story and there's like a direct benefit from it. Like you can see that you wrote something and it has gone well in the community. Yeah. And it's impacted the community in a positive. And so I'm stoked not only just in general, but for Chelsea as well. Somebody who's been on at the News Press for a little over a month now. So
it's just a testament. I've said this so many times. The North Idaho community has to be one of the most giving communities I've ever seen in my whole life. And this is just another testament of it.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. All right, that takes us out of Shoshone News Press headlines and up north to the Bonner County Daily Bee out of Sandpoint, starting with headlines from Wednesday, November 17th. County opts for opioid settlement. This is by Anissa Keith. County commissioners unanimously approved registering for a settlement agreement for a national opioid lawsuit. The draft allocation agreement comes as the suggestion of the governor's and attorney general's office. They asked the county to opt in to the Idaho Opioid Settlement Interstate Allocation Agreement. Boy, that's a mouthful. Which is a settlement determining how funds from a national opioid lawsuit are to be distributed in the state and county. The agreement is part of a national lawsuit that settles all opioid litigation in the United States. Quote, Idaho will see $120 million over 18 years, said Deputy Clerk Jesse Webster, who was also the board's operations manager. Quote, $48 million of that is going to be dispersed to local governments, and Bonner County will see 2.59% of that. Quote, could they have given us a more exact number, asked McDonald. Specifically, Bonner County is slated to receive $1,247,393.62 over 18 years, coming to $69,299.64 per year. The settlement has been in the draft process since 2018, and the money received must go toward opioid abatement in Bonner County. No one spoke during the public comment, and the commission unanimously approved registering with the settlement agreement. The county commissioners hold a weekly business meeting that is open to the public at 9 a.m. every Tuesday in the administrative building, which is located at 1500 Highway 2. I mean, I don't necessarily know if throwing more money at the opioid problem is going to fix it, but I suppose it can't hurt, right?
No, they're receiving this money.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean.
But you said throwing more money at the opioid settlement.
So, like, the county is receiving money to spend on fixing the opioid crisis in their area. I'm not convinced that more money is going to fix anything.
You know, if I've learned anything from
it can't hurt.
Report on government and public services, it's that things like signage and advertising cost money.
That's fair.
You know, it's also like you have to be able to provide counseling services and mental health services for these individuals. So, yeah, throwing money at things is not good, but if it's in the interest of my personal
it's a terrific goal, and if it's I think like treatment facilities and detox and kind of, that kind of thing, those might go more to, you know, I don't know, what are those like meth billboards where it shows, you know, horrific,
not even once,
yeah you don't even want to look at it, you're like, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Like I get it, but at the same time I don't know if those billboards are stopping as much as they think that they are.
I don't know, man. Those TV advertisements when I was a little kid, oh, like Meth Not Even Once.
Yep.
Scared out of my mind.
You guys are probably too young to have been in the DARE program, but... Okay, see, it was like an Idaho thing in elementary schools where you had to like...
I thought that was like a national thing.
Might have been, yeah. Hmm. Might have been. But it was like, it was in big red letters, DARE. And you had to like, it stood for something, but you had to basically like once, I want to say it was once a week, maybe once every month, like a cop would come in and like show you about, you know, the dangers of all these drugs and all that kind of thing. And I remember even going to like, you had a ceremony where like you signed a thing that said, I would never do drugs or alcohol. I might have lied.
Sorry,
former Sheriff Rocky Watson. I shook your hand and I said I would never drink. And
Rocky Watson, what a good name.
Rocky Watson, I have a lot of respect for that guy.
All right, well, regional airports receive funding. This one's by Anissa Keith. The Board of County Commissioners allocated $500,000 of federal and county money for improvement projects in the airport department. The first asked the commission to approve a change in order for the Sandpoint Runway Repair project totaling $171,000. The funding will come from the department's budget carryover from last year and will be used to continue repairing pavement at the airport. Quote, we removed and replaced approximately 170,000 square feet of runway this summer and patched another 92,000 square feet, said Dave Shook, the airport department manager. Shook said that the department had set aside extra funding for the project in case it exceeded the estimated price of repairs. Now that the runway repairs have been completed at close to the estimated price, the department has additional funding it would like to use to be able to repair more pavement at the airport that isn't strictly on the runway or taxiway. The board approved the funding to be spent on the project. The second item asked commissioners to approve grant amendment requests for the Priest River Airport. The request increased the amount of federal airport improvement program grant funds by $9,000, as the airport was unable to acquire all of the lots that were originally expecting to gain. AIP grant funds go to the Priest River Airport now, total $370,000. The commissioners approved the amendment request. The county commissioners hold weekly business meetings that is open to the public at 9 a.m. every Tuesday in the administrative building at 1500 Highway 2. So they were doing business this week.
Mm-hmm. They were. Seems like it. Seems like they were keeping busy anyway.
You go, Bonner County Commissioners.
There you go. All right, moving on. Thursday, November 18th headlines. City plans for snow removal. This is by Emily Bonsant. Sandpoint officials have updated the city's proactive response plan for winter weather and announced its priority network for snow removal. Sandpoint experiences approximately 30 days of winter weather each year with an average annual snowfall of 58 inches. Winter weather conditions typically occur between November and March, said city staff. Rate and accumulation of snowfall, temperature, time of day, visibility, wind, and traffic are among the variables that affect decisions made regarding each storm, said city staff. And so the city has planned for unpredictable conditions. City officials said that responding to winter weather conditions requires collaboration between the city and its citizens. Sandpoint currently dedicates up to 12 operators to help tackle snow, ice, and slush. City officials said their mission is to provide the greatest level of service and safety to the traveling public. Crews will plow all streets, including residential, when it snows 2 inches or more. The response plan provides proactive pre-treatment of priority 1 and 2 streets, proactive scheduling of crews for nearly 24-hour coverage, and emphasis on streets traveled most and seasonal parking rules. Officials said crews will provide timely communication through the city's Engage Sandpoint app and through its snow hotline at 208-920-SNOW. I don't know how they came up with that one. Sandpoint has a priority network of streets because it is impractical both physically and fiscally to give all streets an equal level of service and maintain near continuous coverage, said city staff. In being consistent with other municipalities, available resources focus on the street most traveled and on those provide access to essential services. Quote, streets with higher intensity use have a higher priority for snow removal service, said city staff. Again, great. Not sure how they came up with that. Smart. In order to help crews complete operations safely and in a timely manner, officials ask residents to park on the side of the street with an even-numbered address between November 1st and March 1st unless posted otherwise. Once a snow event has ended and the odd side of the street has been plowed, residents should move their vehicles to the odd side of the street to allow for plowing. Street vehicles parking downtown is not permitted between the hours of 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. Vehicles on the left side of the street, when not in accordance with the policy, are subject to being towed at the owner's expense. All street parked vehicles must be cleared of snow within 24 hours of any storm, so snowplow operators can clearly see the vehicles. Just another reminder that snow's on the way.
Yay.
Yay.
That means skiing and snowboarding.
Skiing and snowboarding. There you go.
Do you do both?
Yeah, but I like boarding better.
There
yeah.
you go.
In my thought process in my head when I was learning to ski and snowboard, because I did learn like a couple times when I was like a younger, when I first moved to Idaho, is we went out to Bogus Basin and they're like, do you want to learn how to ski or snowboard? Mm. I looked up at the hill, saw all these like cool young hip people snowboarding down, yep. and then I saw these like married older couples yep. skiing, and I was like, we're gonna do the other one, we're yep. not gonna do that one. You know, I was also like 12 and
really yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Snowboarding is where all the cool kids do. Yeah, I know, I get it. I'm more of an ice skater, so I just need to hope that it
an
gets...
An ice skater.
I played hockey for 24 years.
I just
years.
Instantly think of figure skating.
Oh, like, that's funny. I actually, it's funny because people don't understand that there's a difference between hockey skates and figure skates. I'm not actually very... I played hockey for 22 years. I'm not very solid on figure skates. It's a totally different blade. It's all about slide, and you stop by putting your toe up, which is different compared to ice hockey skates. But no, I just hope that it gets cold enough to where the lakes freeze over.
Yeah,
it's been a while since that happened, but
that would be the coolest thing. I would love to do that.
Oh, I've skated on Avondale Lake. I've skated on Fernand, Hauser, never Lake Coeur d'Alene.
I still have to try the one in the park here.
Oh yeah.
Well, I need to go do that too. I think that would be super fun. I need to go do that. All right, no, moving
no, no,
on.
No, no, no. Excuse me. This is
oh, you got.
Headline.
Oh, okay. I apologize.
All right, Friday, November 19th. Headlines. This is it. Sandpoint looks to race second state championship tonight. This one is by Dylan Green. It's finally here. Sandpoint's season ends today. They can't go any further. The Bulldogs have reached the mountaintop, and only one team stands between them and all the glory. It will all be settled on the Gridiron tonight when Sandpoint 8-2 battles Skyline 8-4 in the 4A state championship game at the Kibbe Dome. Skyline is the team that knocked the Bulldogs out in the state semis last year. That defeat left a nasty taste in the Bulldogs' mouth, and now Sandpoint gets a chance to return the favor and take the defending state champions off their throne. And the team won't be satisfied with anything less. Quote, last year we got robbed, junior Wes Benefield said. This is our week for a redemption run. When the state playoff bracket came out and the top-seeded Bulldogs saw Skyline on the bottom of the bracket as the number 6 seed, senior Garrett Cox of the team was already licking their chops about potentially a rematch in the state title game, and they got exactly what they wanted. Quote, We just got all the cards in our favor, he said. It's nice to get them in the dome for all the marbles. Sandpoint's historic run this season will be remembered for years to come. The Bulldogs have overcome injuries to star players and earned comeback victories in their last two playoff games, and now they have a chance to bring home the program's second state title. This is Sandpoint's fifth state championship appearance in the last 24 years. In 1997, they won it all for the first time. Since then, they are 0-3. The combined deficit of all three of those games, 24. Destiny awaits the Bulldogs on Friday night. Kickoff is set for 7 p.m. at the Kibbe Dome, and doors open at 5 p.m. Tickets to the game can be purchased online at govandals.com. Face coverings are required inside the stadium, regardless of vaccination status. If you can't make it, you can listen to the game on AM radio at 1400 KSPT or Rock 103, or on FM 102.9 or rock103fm.com, or watch it on the NFHS network for $10.99. There is also a game stream available on idahosports.com. Let's go, Bulldogs.
Hey, they're pretty much the only team at this point that's doing anything for fall sports. So, yeah, go Bulldogs. Absolutely.
Wow, that was so pessimistic.
Well, no, like, I mean, for like...
They're the only thing doing anything for fall sports. I'm like, damn.
No. I guess I could have said that in like a more enthusiastic tone. They are the only team that's still standing out of all the other North Idaho teams. So, yes, absolutely go Bulldogs. I have a lot of mixed loyalties, okay? I grew up in Post Falls, so the Trojans, and then now I've spent the last 6 years in the Silver Valley, so I'm partial to Kellogg and Wallace and Mullen, so my loyalties are all over the place.
I was in Sandpoint for a while.
There you go. So we got a Sandpoint person. There we go.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. CFHS students get up-close look at trades in action. This is by Emily Bonsant. A group of Clark Fork High School students recently got the chance to learn about a variety of different trades as well as the training needed to land jobs in those fields and what job might be available. The trip was part of a visit by CFHS Fabrication Track students to North Idaho College's Parker Technical Education Center. Quote, the point of the trip is for students to see educational paths that lead to real jobs, said Alex Woodmancy, CFHS Career Technical Education Instructor. The whole point of the trip was for students to see how the trades are taught in school and see how they are as a job, said Woodmancy. The students completed the adventure of Ground Force Worldwide. Woodmancy said students were able to see the education and skills they would acquire from such programs like NIC has to offer put into action. Quote, it was an awesome experience for the students and myself to see everything from the engineering design, the fabrication process, to the finished product leaving the paint booths, he said. Machinery and technology was rather impressive. CFHS tracks include everyone from freshmen to seniors. Woodmancy said the trip was a good chance to expose younger students to brainstorm post-high school plans and job opportunities of which they may not be aware. Quote, some underclassmen said they knew what they wanted to do for work after this tour. They may change their plans 100 times, but now they are creating goals for themselves. Woodmancy said the education tracks at CFHS are meant to help students explore their interests, and they have a long tradition of pushing students to NIC and other trade schools, he said. Woodmancy said he approaches the program as more of a practice of talents with the tools like woodshop used to be. He pushes for students to learn safety, working with tools, and problem solving. The class is not designed only for students who want to enter the welding trade, but for students to weld for themselves and repair their own tools. Woodmancy said CFHS is committed to trade skill and providing a path for every student. Love this kind of stuff. Kind of in the same vein of like when they help seniors apply for FAFSA and college and stuff. Love this kind of thing.
I am constantly reminded whenever I write a story or read a story about trade schools that I don't know how to do any of those things that they teach. And I've seriously thought a couple times, I was like, I should just like go to trade school.
It'd be so cool just to have those like skills. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I don't know that I'll be able to like use it very much because like I don't have equipment to weld or anything.
But, you know, if the time came to happen, you'd be prepared.
Oh, I'm saying, especially if you're in North Idaho, it's very taboo to say that, like, I don't know a lot about vehicles. Like, I'm a North Idaho boy. Oh, no. Like, I'm supposed to, like, just know everything, but I just never got around to it, I guess. I don't know.
My dad is not that kind of man.
Knows everything about vehicles?
No. I think the only thing he's ever taught me about vehicles is how to put air into my tires, which I'm actually semi-proud of because I didn't realize how many people don't know how to do that.
Is it just because he hasn't showed you or he doesn't know either?
I'm not going to doubt him. I know he doesn't listen to this podcast, so I'm just going to say, sure. my dad is not a handyman.
Sure. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
My mom's great, though.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
All right. So we should go further north to Bonner's Ferry for the Thursday, November 18th headlines. The Moye Dam receives repairs. This one's by Emily Bonsant. The first two phases of improvements to the Moye Dam have been completed by resurfacing the west spillway, west wall, and center wall. Mike Klaus, city engineer, said that the dam was completed in 1948, and after 70 years of deterioration, the face of the structure was in need of repair. City Administrator Lisa Alport said repairs to the city-owned dam were needed to keep it operational and for Bonner's Ferry to keep its license in good standing with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The project was funded by a $4.125 million bond, which passed in May. Some places in the spillway required almost a foot of new concrete, Klaus said. After the old concrete was removed with a high-powered water hose, the face of the dam was kept dry for remodeling by directing water to the valve, which takes it to the turbine in the water house. Water was then re-released into the river without passing over the dam. Concrete today is made from crushed gravel and angular rocks. However, when the dam was built, the most available rock was rounded river rock that was likely found near the job site, Klaus said. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Quote, I know that the terms concrete and cement are used interchangeably, but it turns out that cement is one of the components of concrete, Klaus said. I did not know that. Huh. That's good to know. The expansion and contraction of concrete that can lead to cracking can be mitigated by adding air, he said. This is also called air entrainment. Entrainment is provided when a chemical is added that creates little air bubbles in the concrete once it is placed. Those little air bubbles help absorb the forces of expansion and contraction, reducing the potential for cracking, Klaus said. He added that when the dam was originally built, it likely didn't have any air entrainment. This left the dam surface more susceptible to cracking due to natural freeze and thaw cycles. In addition, the occasional log coming over the dam's face also contributed to damage sustained over the years. Klaus said the patchwork was done in the 1980s and 1990s, which helped maintain the dam. The West Spillway has been repaired in the first two phases. The East Spillway and East Wall will be repaired in the third phase of the project next year. Construction crews, quote, beefed up the dividing wall of the two spillways by adding more concrete and widening the center wall. The Moyer Dam provides 25% to 30% of the overall electricity needed in Bonner's Ferry. Klaus said that if the city can keep the dam operational, then they won't have to spend money on power through Bonneville Power Administration. When the bond passes overwhelmingly in support of the improvements of the dam, Klaus said that this told city's officials that ratepayers find value in having a dam in working and operational use. He said in order to keep it operating, the Moyer Dam has to be maintained. Since it is a runoff river dam, its production and energy waxes and wanes per season. The goal, Klaus said, is to keep the dam operational for the next 100 years. I learned a lot in that story, and I also said the word dam a lot. And these are two things that I love to do.
It's fantastic. I as somebody who grew up in Post Falls, I always went to the dam near Quellen Park. I absolutely loved it. They have some pretty impressive, I don't know. They're just like,
what do they call it? The Falls.
The Falls Dam. Yeah. Yep, exactly.
There's a story about that dam.
They're such like feats of engineering. If that makes any sense. Like how do you like create this giant wall that stops all this water? And not only does it do that, but it also creates electricity. Like,
yeah.
So cool. I love that. Science. It's like how kids love trains. Like dams. Rules. There you go. Love it. All right. That's the only story we're doing for Bonner's Ferry. I think that's it for the day.
That is it for the day. Hannah, what did you think?
Slightly stressed. Okay.
Okay, but it was a good first episode. You did great. Okay. Glad that you came on. Glad that you had fun with us. We hope to have you on again in the future. And maybe even if you get comfortable enough, subbing in here and there.
Yes, we don't see Chance anymore. That'd be
great. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdaluepress.com, ShoshoneNewsPress.com, BonnerCountyDB.com, or TheBonnersFerryHerald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please subscribe and or like and or follow us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And give us a like and follow on the NIN Facebook page just to interact with us and have fun with us. Please leave a nice review on whatever podcast you do listen in on. We check those, and they mean a lot to us. And whenever you guys have any comments, questions, concerns, we track them. We stay up at night and look at those. It keeps us up. So
everything keeps me up at night.
I don't think Madison slept in years. All right, everybody. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.